Good afternoon. I want to call this meeting of the State Department's Veterans Budget Division to order Thursday, March 27th, about 12 minutes after 3. Quorum is present. Members, today we have three bills, one review of governor's recommendations for the Racing Commission and our supplemental budget article. It's all on your agenda. Copies of the information are in your packets. I do not expect us to need to go beyond our regularly scheduled time. With that, we're going to start with Senator Rosen. Good afternoon, Senator Rosen.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for this hearing. You bet. I appreciate it. 2715 is basically an appropriation for Farm America of $200,000. And members, if you're not familiar with Farm America, it's our the Minnesota's Agricultural Interpretive Center. And it's down in Waseca. It's on 120 acres down there. The state built it back in 1978. It was built by the legislature. And it should be supported by the legislature, but sometimes the funding has been going down drastically through the years. There is no municipality connection at all, so we can't do any bonding with that, and that has caused a lot of problems, unlike the Minnesota Zoo or the Kelly Farm, and I'm not even sure, Mr. Chair, the Forest Interpretive Center or the Mining Interpretive Center, if they can receive bonding or if they have sales tax exempt on them.
Well, Senator Rosen, Forest History Center, I think, is involved in the same way that the Farm Center is. The mining, you know, what are we calling that now? The Discovery Center or whatever it is,
yep.
is a little different thing, and it's run out of a foundation now. But
okay.
But yeah,
well, this Farm America serves a very, very important part for agriculture, and as an old retired agronomist, I've been there many times and see the school groups that come there and learn about agriculture, past, present, and their next push is towards farming and agriculture in the future, which is extremely important. We are asking for basically a bricks and mortar appropriation. They have some bills. They have some improvement. They have 30 buildings on site and simple things such as a parking lot or a roof. And it's run by volunteers. I think they have one administrator, an office administrator, but the rest is all volunteers. So the money would go just for supplies, and everything else would be volunteers. With that, Mr. Chair and members, I have Dr. Tom Haggerty. A retired state veterinarian with us, and he grew up right across the street from Farm America, is on the board, and he can fill in the blanks.
Thank you, Dr. Haggerty. Would you identify yourself for the tape and go ahead?
Thank
Glad
you,
to have you here today.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Tom Haggerty. I'm a member of the board of directors of Farm America, and I'm here because the executive director was unavailable. But at any rate, what we are doing is looking for some money to make some improvements. Our list of needs are much greater than what we're saying it is, but we know that there are limitations to what we can ask for. But essentially, as Senator Rosen said, what we're looking for is things that we can fix up, roofs and safety, keep the water out of these old buildings. We've got examples from the 1850s with the sod house. And we wouldn't need any money for the sod house. We could cut some sod and put that up there. But when we got up on that barn, 1930s barn, we need real people up there doing that sort of work. So we got the 1850 settlement. We've got the 1930s farm, the red barn, the windmill, the outbuildings. And then we've got a newer facility, which is shown by our steel building that houses our implements and that sort of thing. But we do have parking lots, and we do have this timeline that we use to go from one of these areas to the other. And that was all hard surface, blacktop, and I'm guessing 12 to 15 years ago. And now that surface needs to be refurbished, needs to be fixed up. And so this is part of what we would need this money for.
Good. Do we have any questions? Go ahead, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rosen, you say this is a one-time appropriation. Seems like this should be an ongoing type of a, you know, keeping this thing always looked at and always maintained and always funded. So does this fall through the cracks, or is this just the name of the game?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson. And they tend to take care of themselves down there, but at points when they come to the Capitol to ask for help, we know they've been stretched. They're fundraising. They have a large fundraising going on. Like I said, it's primarily volunteer help. The commitment from the state, it was built by the state almost over 30 years ago. The commitment from the state has been going down, and of course costs have been going up. There's admission costs, but they can't fill in the blanks, and I appreciate your question, because that's basically what they feel like. They have it broken down to $200,000 is exactly what is going to be needed for each of the buildings that Dr. Haggerty was talking about. So they know what needs to be fixed up, but their hands are, and it's a wonderful site. I would love to have everybody come down and just stroll through there and see what agriculture was like, and then, as I said, what it's projected to be.
Other questions, Senator Manson?
I'd move that Senate Bill 2715 be in consideration the bonding.
Well, I think the proper motion is that we're going to lay it over for inclusion,
inclusion. That's better wording than
so
I just
it's in the final bill. And
thank you.
And so we'll be considering it later. Okay? Thank you, Senator Rosenstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you.
Okay. So we're going to Senator Hoffman's not here yet, so we're going to go to item 3, the review of the governor's supplemental budget recommendations for the Racing Commission.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members
good.
Of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to speak with you today on behalf of the Racing Commission. Just by way of introduction, my name is Tom DePasquale. I was appointed Executive Director of the Commission in December of 2013. Prior to that, I was appointed to the Commission in July. And prior to that, I was Assistant General Counsel at 3M. So I left that job so I could enjoy moments like this. As I'm sure you all know, the mission of the Racing Commission is to ensure that horse racing and card playing are conducted in the public interest, and we do that by effective and fair regulation, by protecting the health and safety and welfare of the equine and human athletes, and hopefully the spin-off effect of this is to promote agricultural, breeding, and related industries in the state of Minnesota. In 2013, the Racing Commission came in for a lot of unwanted media attention. Internal investigations of our then chair of the commission and our deputy director and a consequent lawsuit for gender discrimination and open meeting law violations took their toll on agency resources and morale. A dispute between running aces and the standardbred horse persons also contributed to sapping our resources and straining important industry relationships. So what have we done to address those concerns? Well, first of all, we've brought in good people. We've reached out to other government agencies to support our efforts. We've defined the expectations for excellence in all that we do in the commission. And we're addressing legacy issues, which I'll address in a minute. I just want to compliment the governor's appointment of my predecessor, Christian Batson, from the Management and Budget Office. That was a first and very important step in addressing the needs of the commission. The MRC also has strong new leadership in Chairman Ralph Strangis, a business lawyer from Minneapolis, and two newly appointed commissioners. Previous splintering within the commission has been addressed, and we now speak with one voice through our leadership. We're also in the final stages of hiring a deputy director. We did a nationwide search. We had 110 applicants. We whittled the field down to the final stages, and we now have a slate of final candidates, which we'll be interviewing in the next couple weeks, all of whom have advanced degrees, extensive industry experience, and operational excellence. We also hired a former acting director of Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division and a seasoned Department of Public Safety investigator who will be our principal investigator at Running Aces. These changes and new hires are opportunities to improve our operations and bring excellence to everything that we do. We've also contracted with SMART, the Small Agency Resource Team, to provide human resources and administrative and financial support. They're educating me in the nuances of government budgeting and our own budget, and they've been extremely helpful. They're doing a great job. They and many other agencies, Alcohol and Gambling, Gambling Control Board, and others with whom I've met, are providing impartial perspectives on our processes and identifying opportunities for improvement. In January of 2014, now I'll address the legacy issues that really lead to some of the budget strains that we have. In January of 2014, we asked the Office of Legislative Auditor to investigate the facts surrounding a purse contribution dispute between Running Aces and the Minnesota Harness Racing Initiative. We also asked the Legislative Auditor to examine our own internal procedures and our own processes for overseeing paramutual auditing and purse contributions. I'm informed that that audit will be issued fairly soon, and we'll act on it to improve what we need to do to better enforce the law. Last week, we settled the lawsuit from the former deputy director, the gender discrimination suit that I mentioned. Our goal was to put that matter behind us as quickly as possible, so we, with the support of the Attorney General, engaged in early mediation, and we pressed for a resolution without rehashing the personal animosities and other charges that fueled that case. That case will not settle without this appropriation. The money is not in our budget, so that settlement is conditional on appropriation by the legislature and ratification by the commission, which leads us to a discussion of the budget issues in the bill before you. Two questions: where will the money come from, and why we need it? The money will come from the Racing Commission's own special revenue fund. Just to be clear, we get revenues of about $800,000 a year from the licensees, that is the two racetracks, and the 6,000 or so individual licensees. We run into a statutory mandated ceiling on our spending of $899,000 a year. So our expenses in fiscal year 14, attributable to increased operational costs and one-time hits, such as the investigations, the lawsuit, have caused us to exceed our statutory ceiling of $899,000. So I want to emphasize this is not new money. We're asking for access to our own special revenue fund, and the funds will sit there unspent without this appropriation. We need it because of both these short-term items I've referred to and a structural budget deficit, which is attributable to a relatively flat revenue stream that goes back into the early 2000s of $800,000 a year and gradually increasing operational expenses. So with that, I'll ask for your support for the bill. And wanted you also to know that we have an annual report that we file with the legislature and the governor's office, which is available to you. If you want to just ask me, and I'll send a copy. And I'm also happy to meet with any of the members of the committee at any time to talk about Racing Commission-related issues. But with that, I ask for your support, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sir, you're saying that you, out of the budget that you have now, you'll exceed your $899,000 spending. How much more is needed to take care of the lawsuit?
Mr. DePasquale.
Mr. Chair, Senator, the lawsuit cost will be approximately $75,000. $55,000 is the actual settlement. $10,000 will be mediation costs and approximately $10,000 in attorney general costs.
And Mr. Chair?
Senator Anderson.
Mr. DePasquale, the remaining $25,000 goes all the way back to the beginning of the Racing Commission to take care of some concerns?
Money in there.
Mr. Chair, Senator, those were we're forecasting. There are already costs that we've incurred relating to the investigations, which were exceedingly costly. We will be hiring a deputy director. That has we have operated without a deputy director for some time, and part of that is my salary as well.
Chair,
other question.
Just
Senator
Metz. Mr. Chairman, I wonder if the State Department Veterans Supplemental Budget appropriation, where we have here it is here, lines 11 and 12 in your last sheet here. I think that points out the money that we're maybe later this afternoon we're going to approve. And I think that's for the litigation and regulatory costs that we're talking about now.
Well, actually, Senator Metz, this is a report that Mr. DePasquale is giving us. And the money that we're talking about that's needed here is in the governor's supplemental budget. So we don't have to deal
with it. But, Mr. Chairman, having you said that, I think Senator Anderson kind of pointed in that direction.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of trying to clear it up that that is in the supplemental on the last sheet in the Anderson and your file. Yeah, you got it. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, I think that
very
helps
good.
Clear it up.
Other questions for Mr. DePasquale? If not, we appreciate your report, Mr. DePasquale. And you know, having met with you at least once, feel like there's a level of stability now in the Racing Commission we haven't seen for a while. So I appreciate that, too.
Well, thank you. I hope so. And I'm looking forward to learning more and serving the state in that capacity. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Senator Hoffman. Senator Hoffman, I've been told that you might have an oral amendment.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I do have an oral amendment. Would you like me to?
On Senate File 2522?
That's correct. And it is page 1, delete section 1. Page 4, delete section 2. Page 6, line 21, after grants, insert of up to $50,000 each.
Mr. Chair, could you repeat the last one?
Could you repeat the last one?
Page 6. Mr. Chair, page 6, line 21, after the word grants, insert of up to $50,000 each.
So this is all that's remaining.
Senator Kozlowka? Okay. All right. You want to just briefly explain that amendment? What's it accomplishing, Senator Hoffman?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, what this does is it takes out all the it takes out everything except for the Veterans Housing Survey grants. It just puts what's in front of you, Senator, is the Veterans Housing Survey grants only.
Very good.
Chairman, I'll move the deleting at Section 1 and 2 and whatever else.
The oral amendment to Senate File 2522 is moved by Senator Metzner. Is there any questions, any discussion? Not all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? As amended, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the amendment in place, Section 3, titled Veterans Housing Survey Grant, is the only thing that remains in section. The purpose of Senate File 2522 now becomes focused on grants to determine housing needs assessment for veterans. As veterans' housing needs are determined, we're finding that there are varied needs from community to community, and there are varied housing availability, especially in the categorical of transitional housing. This leads to confusion. We must do better for our veterans. The funding of this grant in this bill will lead to an organized, non-biased study, Mr. Chair, of what kind and where veteran housing needs are. With that, Mr. Chair, I have Mr. Mike McElhenney here to talk about the bill.
Mr. McElhenney.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Mike McKelney, Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
And, you know, a good Irish name like that, I can murder it. I can say it differently every time, so I apologize.
Oh, I answer to them all, Mr. Chair. But as Senator Hoffman just explained, this bill is really the result of a subcommittee that was put together in the House last year to better understand the various definitions of veterans housing, what that really means, veterans long-term care, long-term housing. There's a variety of definitions. As a matter of fact, yesterday in the in Senator Pappas's committee, she was pleased to understand or get the meaning of domiciliary. So what this does is this just provides, as stated, some dollars to better understand the needs within the communities. As we went through the subcommittee for a matter of months in the interim, a lot of questions were raised, a lot of suggestions were yielded, and this bill is a product of that subcommittee. And what was collectively determined is we need to really understand and go to the communities and see what they believe they need, be it homeless housing or long-term care housing. And so this will enable some objective surveys to be conducted to determine that.
Very good. Questions for me? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McElhaney, the five grants that are mentioned in Section 3, is that referencing back into the language that's already in statute, St. Cloud, Ramsey County, Hennepin County? Am I reading into this properly, or are we looking at other communities besides those that are mentioned in statute already?
Mr. McElhaney.
Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, I don't think there's a specific criteria on where these grants can be used. This is the beginning stages of trying to determine better where within the state all these metrics of various populations exist.
And Senator Anderson, you know, my understanding of this is we didn't make them specific, but, you know, we had Bemidji, Brainerd, Wilmer, and Montevideo that were all interested in long, and I think we're certainly interested in those four because they've been specifically talked about. So, it's four grants of up to $50,000 that we're talking about. Go ahead, Senator Anderson.
You're talking five grants.
Five grants. Yeah.
Five grants.
Five,
yes. Oh, maybe you're cutting government.
Yeah,
oh,
no,
huh?
I'm okay.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's good. I just appreciate that because those were things that were brought up when I was in the House, and we were talking about those same proposals that came forward. And so I just thought maybe they were referencing back into what's already in statute, but because those proposals had been on the table in past years, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with them.
Yeah, me too. All right, other discussion, other questions for the testifiers. Okay, Senator Hoffman, Senate File 2552 is amended. We're going to lay it over, and it will undoubtedly be included in the final bill, which we're going to take on, you know, in 15, 20 minutes.
Mr. Chair and members.
So thank you both for your testimony. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
So this is laid over for inclusion. Should I go down there?
Now this one we ought to shoot down. He didn't hear me.
Senator Saxog, welcome to your committee.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair. And members, today we're dealing with Senate File 1807. I don't know, is there anybody at the table that hasn't heard this? It's been in six or seven committees, so. But anyway, what 1807 does is, and it came to me from the Lieutenant Governor, who's been working on this with the First Lady of the United States, Michelle Obama, and Dr. Jill Biden. It's to help military members, their spouses, and recently discharged veterans who move to a new state to gain employment in a field that might require a license. We are only one of five states in the country that have not done anything in this regard. You should have a one-page handout in your information about the scope of this bill. And in fact, a fiscal note for the portion of the bill relating to this division as well. This is the final stop of six committees. This bill has traveled through. We are here to discuss the general fund fiscal impacts for the non-health-related boards covered on the bill. We do not have to cover the health-related boards as they have their own fund to take care of the related costs. Many boards already have the ability to do this and have everything in place. I'm working with all stakeholders to make sure that we can establish a process for expediting applications and issuing temporary licenses to help our military members, their spouses, and recently discharged veterans. I think the important phrase there is we're establishing a process. We aren't telling anybody what they're going to do or establishing the process that that they can get it done, and we certainly hope they do because we think this is important for our military members. So with me today is Don Kerr, the Executive Director of the Department of the Military, to give brief testimony and help answer any questions. And we have the post board here with us, too. So we're going to look forward to hearing from both of them.
Thank you, Senator Sacksog. Mr. Kerr, welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. The agency supports this bill. We feel it won't be a huge benefit to our existing members, but we do know that there will be a large number of service members transitioning from active duty, and we feel that the provisions of this bill reduce barriers to them choosing Minnesota as a place to come live, contribute to the environment and the economy. So that's our position on it.
Thank you. And to the post board member, who I just heard you in Judiciary, but I don't remember your name. I apologize.
Madam Chair, my name is Neil Melton. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Peace Officer Standards and Training, and I've been in a number of these committees along this path. Post supports Senate File 1807 as it relates to, as it says on line 1.25, qualified individuals. The Post Board already has a similar practice in place to accommodate people who meet that criteria. That is, eligible persons will take the exam within 1 week. The process to review and approve the application takes that long. 1 week or 7 days, that's as fast as we can make it. Also, once the person passes the post-licensing exam, they become eligible. It is the responsibility of the hiring agency, chiefs and sheriffs, to activate the license by contacting the post board. As it relates to law enforcement, this law addresses an employment and hiring standard, not necessarily or not just a post-licensing standard. But the post board will continue to work with military members to ensure they receive efficient services in a supportive manner. And on a personal note, as a Vietnam vet, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Melton. The post board does a good job, so I appreciate that. Senator Chamberlain.
Was reminded that this bill originally included state agencies, and that's now removed. Was there a reason for that, Senator Sacksog?
I guess none other than many of them are already covered under this also.
In other words, it would probably also work for them currently.
Well, and to work for a state agency, you may have to get a license or a permit, but you might not too, you know. And we're only trying to cover the ones here that need licenses and permits.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions, members? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kerr, do you know or have any projection idea of how many military members could be affected by this going into statute?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, very difficult to know. Nationally, we know that the Army alone is going to do a reduction or is in the process of doing a reduction from $560,000 to $490,000. How many of those will choose to come back to Minnesota? I have no way of knowing. There will also be some benefit to service members that are serving inside our ranks. For example, the actual military police issue is a pretty good example of that. Our service members can accumulate enough time as military policemen to qualify for consideration to be peace officers in Minnesota through this bill as well.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kerr, I know that when I was in the military that when they were talking about bracking bases and things like that, that they'd all gave us an indication as members of the military how many positions would be lost. And so I'm just wondering if that number's been given to different organizations, Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines, whatever. And I would think we'd have those numbers, but.
Mr. Kerr.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, frankly, a moving target in all of the service components right now. The Army is moving forward with a plan to reduce itself to 490 on its way to 450. The National Guard may come from its current 350 to 335 or 315, depending on whether sequestration remains in effect. But under any circumstances, there are a very large number of members of the action component, not just of the Army, and those are only Army numbers. I apologize, I don't have the Air Force or Navy numbers on me, of what we're looking at over the next 2 to 3 years for a reduction.
Any other questions, members? Any final comments, Senator Saxhog?
Not really. Thank you, though, Madam Chair. I would request that Senate File 1807 be laid over for inclusion in the supplemental budget article.
Okay, Senator Saxhog moves that Senate File 1807 be laid over and for possible inclusion in the supplemental budget article. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion passes.
So, Madam Chair, at this point, the last item on our agenda is the supplemental budget article that we will send on to the Finance Committee. And should I have the staff? Kevin, did you want to lead us through that, please?
Sure.
Mr. Lundeen.
Thank you. We can take a look at the first article of the bill and the spreadsheet that's been included in your packets. I guess I'll go through the spreadsheet first and then we'll get into some of the language. The first item is the Legislative Coordinating Commission, and we have two appropriations in the bill. There's a $300,000 operating increase for the joint legislative offices. This is in response. We had some testimony earlier in the session from the LCC and the legislative auditor. So this was to kind of meet some of those needs. The second item is from House File 683, the Water Commission bill of Senator Wiegers that we heard earlier this week. And there's an appropriation in there for $155,000. And then we have tails to that commission of $145,000 that will be available as long as the commission, until the commission sunsets after fiscal year 2019. The next item under Department of Administration is Senate File 1805. This is the Veterans Business Preference. This is a bill of Senator Saxhog's. And there is $150,000 in there in 2015, and then we have included tails of $112,000 each year that will be added to the base. The next item is Senate File 2522, the Vets Home Study that we just heard Senator Hoffman's bill on, and there's $250,000 in the bill for that. The next item is the Racing Commission, which we just heard from the director of the Racing Commission. And these are the amounts that were included in the governor's supplemental bill. Total of $185,000 for the biennium in one-time dollars. The next item is the Amateur Sports Commission. This is the Childhood Obesity Pilot Project that we heard in committee, I believe it was last week, Senate File 2511. The next item is under the Minnesota Historical Society. This is the bill that Senator Rosen presented with a lesser amount for Farm America. And I know there was a question when we were talking about funding that goes to this. I would point out in the budget bill last year, we do provide $115,000 a year in ongoing money to Farm America, so this $10,000 would be in addition to that. The next item is the Humanities Commission, and we have $125,000 going to the Veteran Voices program. This was a bill of Senator Saxhog's that we heard in committee recently. And also included in the rider of that $125,000 is a $25,000 transfer to Amper's radio stations. This is to do some statewide programming to promote this particular program. And this is a one-time appropriation also. The next items that we get to on the spreadsheet are all related to the bill that we just talked about with the expedited licensing for the military members. And these are the costs for the temporary licensing. And so Department of Education is $44,000. This is for the Board of Teaching. And then we've got the Board of Accountancy at $44,000, Board of Architecture and Engineering, the Board of Cosmetology at $20,000, the Board of Examiners at $10,000, and the Board of Private Detectives at $44,000. And those were all general fund appropriations. Then we've also included the appropriations from the State Government Special Revenue Fund, which is the fund where the health boards deposit their fees. And then these appropriations are to those boards, the Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy for $15,000, Board of Dentistry $10,000, the Board of Dietetics and Nutrition Practice $10,000, the Board of Marriage and Family Therapy $14,000, the Board of Nursing Home Administrators $1,000, the Board of Optometry $10,000, the Board of Pediatric Medicine $10,000, and the Board of Social Work for $3,000. So the total amount of spending in the bill is $1,246,000 from the general fund, $185,000 from the special revenue fund, and $73,000 from the state government special revenue fund. And then moving on in the bill, if we go to page 5 and section 3, there is a provision in the bill that increases the number of leadership positions in the House and Senate. The next item on the next page, section 4, this is the language from Senator Wieger's bill that establishes the Water Commission. Going over to page 5, sections 5 and 6, this is dealing with the veteran-owned small business certification. This is similar language to what was contained in Senator Saxhog's Senate File 1805. And then if we turn over to page 8, section 7 through 12, these are some of the conforming changes to implement Senator Saxhog's bill, Senate File 1807, dealing with the temporary licensing and expedited licensing for the military members. And then if we go to page 10 of the bill, section 13, this is the language from Senator Champion's bill, Senate File 2201, that dealt with the definition of the employee to reflect the school calendar. This was the bill that we heard earlier this week. And then moving down to section 14, this is also from the bill that we just discussed of Senator Saxhog's dealing with the expedited and temporary licensing. And section 15 is from Senator Wieger's bill. This is dealing with the Water Commission with the initial appointments and meeting. And that is the bill.
Senator Chamberlain.
Just one clarifying question. Page 5, sub 3. Could you, Senator Saxhog, Madam Chair, could you refresh my memory on that change? From 3 to 4?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Chamberlain. When it said three, it was Majority Leader, Minority Leader, and Finance Chair. The Office of the President was added in there.
All right, thank you. You know, let me just.
Senator Messon?
Yeah, I'm glad that's in there. I've done that work for a while, and we handle all the bills and farm them all out, and there's a lot going on up there, and I'm not there, and I won't be there, but I think it's quite frankly the right thing to do.
Right, and Senator, Madam Chair, and Senator Metzen, and you did this as well as President Pappas, but you handled chairman duties while you were doing that too. So,
Madam Chair, that's correct. In addition to that, we had full committee. So,
any other questions, members?
Madam Chair. Should have done this about 10 years ago, though. Okay.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Saxon, does this bill have to go to local government since it has rules in here? Talking about rules being made up?
Well, I think Senator Anderson, weren't you there? Wasn't I already at local government?
Let's say that.
I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, you were.
Okay.
One.
Yeah.
Yep.
Any other questions, members?
So if there's no other questions for the time being, there's an amendment that needs to be brought up. And I'd like to call the management and budget up to the table to give a brief history and reason the language needs to be added.
Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Margaret Kelly, Assistant Commissioner at Minnesota Management and Budget. I'll wait for you to get the amendment.
We can have the discussion because I think they're running upstairs to get the amendment. So welcome to the committee, and then we'll pass out the amendment as soon as it gets here.
Thank you. We are looking to make an amendment to 16A, specifically 16A.94, the pay-for-performance section of our statute. This was new language added to 16A back in the 2011 session, directing Minnesota Management and Budget to do some pilot projects around a new form of financing state services called social impact bonds or human capital investment bonds. In our statute, we refer to them as pay-for-performance contracts. And in a nutshell, it's a way of contracting that is based 100% on performance instead of being based on activities that are carried out by nonprofits. It was based on an example in the United Kingdom where they entered into a contract between the government and a nonprofit that they would be paid based on a percentage reduction in their recidivism rate. And if they did not achieve that reduction in recidivism, they would not be paid. So we were directed to try and do a pilot or two using that principle here in Minnesota. We've been working to figure this out for the last 2.5 years, and we are getting close to having two pilots. We realized as we worked through the details in the last week with the Corporation for Supportive Housing, who's here with me today, that we needed additional language to implement this pilot in Minnesota. So we are looking in the area of supportive housing, and particularly with individuals who are housed currently in state-operated facilities through the Department of Human Services, individuals who are developmentally disabled, housed in group homes, and are currently overhoused and need to be moved into a community setting that is more suitable to their needs to meet our Olmstead requirements. Corporation for Supportive Housing proposed in a pilot project that they would move individuals into a supportive housing environment, reducing the state expense for housing, and give them a more appropriate setting. And our contract will be based on their success at moving someone, having them be successfully placed, happy with their environment, and living successfully. We need to ensure, however, that these individuals, as we change the service delivery for them, that the funding to pay for their housing and supportive costs, which are currently in the MA budget, moves along with them as they move out of human services housing into community-based housing. So the language that we have put forward in the form of amendment would simply give us flexibility within the statutes for pay-for-performance to, A, use savings within the pay-for-performance contract to pay for contract costs, and, B, to allow MMB to transfer funds between agencies as needed to ensure that funding follows individuals as we change the service delivery model.
Senator Chamberlain.
So I just to clarify is that so A, you needed language to pay the private organizations, correct, for pay for performance, and B, to fix the language would allow the funding to follow our clients or patients to these different facilities, correct?
Madam Chair, Senator, that's correct.
All right. Okay, thank you.
Senator Champion.
I have a couple questions. So can you elaborate a little more from the perspective of when you say transfer the funds from one place to another? Tell us operationally what would that look like and why?
Certainly, Madam Chair, Senator, we currently pay for housing, supportive services, medical care for individuals who are developmentally disabled living in MSOCs or group homes through the MA budget. It's a part of the MA costs. Moving them into the community means that MA will continue to pay for their health care, but we will need to find a different way to pay for their housing and supportive services, because we don't want to change the services that they're getting. We just want to change the setting in which they're getting them so it's less expensive for the state. But federal law does not allow Medicaid to be spent for housing. So we need to find an alternative method to pay for that housing. We haven't quite gotten that figured out yet, how we're going to pay for that. But we're assuming that we will probably have the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, who is also here today, contract with Corporation for Supportive Housing to pay for the supportive housing services. And so we would need Department of Human Services to continue to forecast those housing-related costs as they would with their MA budget, and that we would transfer those funds for the housing costs from Human Services to the Housing Finance Agency to pay for the housing-related costs.
Madam Chair? So can you help me understand where is the pay-for-performance aspect of it? So what are the measurements that a nonprofit would have to show or demonstrate in order to be able to get this pot of money?
Madam Chair and Senator, we are currently looking at a set of criteria and conditions by which the Corporation for Supportive Housing would need to meet in order for the contract between DHS and Housing Finance Agency and the corporation to be paid. And so they would need to show that they had successfully moved individuals from a group home into a community-based setting, that individual was as happy with their housing in the new setting as they were in the old setting, and that they were able to maintain that individual for at least a year in that setting, and that they did not end up coming back to the state to be housed in a state facility. And if they can demonstrate they have met that criteria, then we would pay based on the terms of the contract, which we are still working on those terms.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Tim.
And so if we were to take the premise that you have so eloquently articulated, which I think it may seem to be a little strained from my perspective, but I just want to get some additional information. So let's say this criteria that you are seeking to develop that isn't developed yet, but you want us as a body to embrace this concept without having the meat on the skeletal bones, help me understand what then would happen if you develop this criteria and this housing corporation is unable to demonstrate that the client successfully transferred from state facilities to the community, and that the person subjectively
now says, I'm happy with this change, and then thirdly, that they stayed out in the community for X amount of time. So if a corporation is unable to demonstrate those things, then tell me what happens.
Madam Chair, Senator, you are totally grasping this. The contract would not, we would not pay on that contract if they had not met the terms of the contract. We have a second pilot that we're doing around workforce development that I think articulates it more easily to understand. The Department of Corrections, the Department of Economic Development, and the Greater Twin Cities United Way would contract for workforce development services for individuals who are currently in our prison system and who are close to being released, to give them workforce employment-related services to ensure that they get a job right away, which would reduce the likelihood of them going back to prison. And there would be savings to the state with fewer people being reincarcerated. And if they could achieve a certain rate of employment among that population and generate the savings, we would pay them a portion of that savings. If they could not, we would not pay them for the services they provided.
Senator Champion.
Madam Chair, thank you. So if the person is unable to demonstrate it, then you would not pay. Then it sounds like to me two things. One is that the burden is put on the nonprofit to have the wherewithal to be able to enter into this sort of contract. And if that's true, then can you tell me what the impact will be on your smaller community-based organizations that are not as large as, let's say, your United Ways or your others that are much more fiscally resourced than the other grassroots organizations?
Certainly, Madam Chair, Senator, that you're absolutely correct in your line of thinking that we are turning contracting on its head. It's and if you want to speak to the Corporation for Supportive Housing, they're here, but the smaller this is a pilot project. It's been tried one place in the United Kingdom. It's been contracts have been entered into in two other states, considered in about a handful of other states. So Minnesota is one of just a handful of states considering this. And we are asking for nonprofits who have the wherewithal to make this happen work with us on this. And at some point in time, it may change the way we contract for services with nonprofits. We're just trying to learn from this to see if and how we could change the way we finance for social services or other services.
Madam Chair, a testifier who I think is very kind, but you did not answer the meatiest part of my question, which is tell me what the impact will be on the less resourced community grassroots organization as opposed to this being something that is much more palatable, if you will, for your larger, more resourced organizations.
Madam Chair and Senator, I think that it would be up to a small nonprofit. So the Corporation for Supportive Housing is going to go out and seek out some nonprofits to partner with in to carry this out. And they will probably choose nonprofits who they can guarantee success from. And a smaller, less resourced nonprofit would certainly benefit from this to the extent that they can deliver on the performance. If it's a smaller, less resourced nonprofit, they may not partner with the Corporation for Supportive Housing. It would impact those nonprofits in the future if we continue to do more and more of this, to the extent that they aren't able to perform at a certain level. The question would then be, to what extent should the state work with them and how should the state work with them?
Madam Chair, if I might. But isn't it true that it's not whether they have the ability to do the work? The question becomes whether they have the ability to finance it on the front end. And if they're not really getting the resources that they need on the front end, and there's no way, even though you use this term and I wrote it down, guarantee success. When we start saying things like guaranteed success, isn't that like cherry picking? Then you start determining which individuals you will work with, which clients you will accept, because then therefore you have a guarantee of success, and therefore other potential clients and organizations fall through the cracks because they can't meet the definition of what you would consider guaranteed success. Is that true, or am I wrong about that?
Kelly? Madam Chair, Senator, you raised two really good points. One is that We are paying for performance, and so they will need to deliver service prior to getting payment. And so a less resourced organization or any organization is going to have cash flow problems. And so part of this model is that we contract with the Corporation for Supportive Housing to act as an intermediary. They will work with particular nonprofits, and they will also work with a funding stream. So, for example, the corporation is working with the Minnesota Nonprofits Assistance Fund, and they are also out working with foundations to provide resources to those nonprofits to cash flow them while they're waiting to get payment from the state. So there is a cash flow issue. There's operating capital that when the state currently contracts with them, we pay them within 3 months of them starting their work. So they only have to cash flow 3 months' worth of work. Now we're asking them to cash flow up to a year or 2 years' worth of work. And if they don't deliver on a performance, we actually don't pay them anything. And so it is not, it's just a pilot project. We're trying to learn from it. If it's not successful, you all can decide if we want to do more of this. But it's not a pilot project at this point in time for a nonprofit who could not manage that. But Corporation for Supportive Housing is working with other foundations in order to make that cash flow work. And I think you had a second question in there that I'm missing an answer to.
I promise, Madam Chair, that I will only ask two more questions, and then I will be quiet.
Two more, and then I have Senator Cohen, Senator Chamberlain, and Senator Anderson.
So then can you tell me what happens to the revenue that you receive if an organization is unable to demonstrate that they have that the clients have been successful and that there and that there's been some savings? So what happens to the resources that you receive that you don't end up needing to pay out? Because now you can argue that they didn't fulfill their end of the bargain. Can you tell me what happens to those folks? And then I'll ask my last question. Or what happens to that money? I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, Senator Champion, that's one of the challenges we are trying to address with this amendment is that to the extent that we're not paying for those services for those individuals for a period of time that we currently are paying for, we need to guarantee that housing does get paid for those individuals. So we're looking to ensure that that can happen through some flexibility in the contracting. But second, to the extent that there is some savings that materialize to the state, but isn't sufficient for them to meet the performance requirements in their contract, those savings would, one of two things would happen. Those savings would either fall to the bottom line, but those savings also in law are directed to pay the debt service on the bonds. And so part of this legislation that got passed in 2011 directs MMB or authorizes MMB to issue appropriation bonds up to $10 million to pay for the contracts. And so we would need to issue the bonds, and we would need to pay back those bonds, and any savings that materializes would first go to pay off the debt service on those bonds, and then the savings would simply fall to the bottom line.
Well, you know what? I will reserve my last question for later. Let me say that.
Madam Chair, I'm going to withdraw the A1 amendment at this time.
Okay.
Thank you.
With that, any other questions on the bill? Senator Chamberlain.
Just for the record, Madam Chair and Senator Sachs, I appreciate the line of questioning, but we cherry-pick in this state government all the time. And it seems to me what the department is trying to do is simply find the best way to deliver the best services and quality services to those who are in need. Simply trying to find a way to get the most effective way to deliver to the client, our customer, or those citizens in need, the best services at the best available price and do it in the best way possible. Ultimately, we're trying to serve the customer. And so I think that's what they were trying to do, and I that's how I saw it, but I just want to put that on the record. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Champion.
To my good friend, Senator Chamberlain, I can always appreciate whenever we try to serve a client, but I don't think it should be at the behest of quality organizations who are attempting to serve that client and say that the financial burden should rest on them from the beginning of the contract, throughout the contract, and now to be measured by a criteria that we don't know anything about even right now. They're still thinking through it. And so I think delivery, quality delivery, is always the aim and the aspiration, but we should never do it at the risk of destroying organizations or cherry picking by determining who's the better resourced ones, not one who can deliver the service. And so I do think that there's a difference, and I can appreciate your concern, but I think the word of the day here is balance.
Thank you, Ms. Senator Champion.
Thank you. Any other discussion on the supplemental budget? Senator Dames.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Sagsaug. When you were talking about adding another position when going to 3 to 4, and that'll be the president. Now, do you feel the duties of the president are more rigorous than, say, that the members of many of these committee chairs?
Madam Chair.
Senator Sagsaug.
Senator Dames, yes.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair,
yep.
Senator Sagsaug, would you explain why?
Well, in the what we've been asking of the president, and the president is a stressful position in itself. They have been taking on committee chair positions, I just think that that's over and above the call of duty, and when I think of the other three positions, I think that it's very much in line with what we're talking about.
Senator Chamberlain.
Well, in that sense, I would agree, and I'm going to give this a shot. We have an A2 amendment. Madam Chair, I could briefly go over this.
Senator Chamberlain, thank you.
Madam Chair, you'll see when you get this, it basically addresses the minority leader's position. It simply says the minority leaders would be allowed to designate two respective leadership positions to receive up to 140%. So it takes yours and what you have in there from 3 to 4, and it says, okay, let's put the let's give minority leaders the same sort of consideration. With that, I'll stand for questions.
Okay, Senator Chamberlain, we passed out the A2 amendment. Is there any discussion on the A2 amendment?
I would speak against the A2 amendment, Madam Chair. I think that the minority leader is in line and with the other three positions, and I guess I don't think that more than one person needs to be designated in the minority body.
Madam Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Senator Sagsaug. In the conversation with Senator Champion, we heard the word balance. So I'm trying to strike a little balance here that we do have, as you know, having been in the minority the previous 2 years, and hopefully you'll see that position again at some time. This would help you all out as well, that you'd have two people. You know, you have chief of staff, you know, others that certainly, not chief of staff, but you have other members that perform other duties as well. So with that, I'll hold all my other comments. I'll leave it at that.
It's been pointed out to me that the four positions that are now that we're considering, the majority leader, minority leader, finance chair, and president are all elected positions.
Right. It would pertain to elected people. I'm sorry. Yes. Okay. I misspoke, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay. So Senator Chamberlain had moved the A2 amendment. Is there a
all in favor?
Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, let me just inquire of maybe Senator Chamberlain.
Madam Chair, I'll withdraw the amendment.
Okay.
That's fine.
Amendment has been withdrawn.
Okay, here we go.
Any other discussion on the supplemental budget? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Saxhog, is there a number given to this bill other than state gov sup 2?
Not at the moment.
No, but we're going to
get that same thing.
But we'll get that.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Madam Chair, maybe I can explain. The way historically we've handled supplemental finance issues in the Senate over the years is we have a single supplemental finance bill. So this division is a division, a subcommittee within the Finance Committee. So what I've asked all the division chairs to do is to present an article to the full Finance Committee of what their proposal is. And it'll be combined into a single bill with the appropriate file number in the Finance Committee. And because this is all within the Finance Committee, it's certainly within the rules of the Senate to do so.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Senator Cohen, because it talks about rulemaking in here, and there is no number, the number I thought I was referring to when I talked earlier about rulemaking, I was referring to 1807, and that one had been before local government, state and local government. But this, I don't think, has been before state and local government as far as rulemaking.
Yeah. And
Senator Cohen?
And Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, that's a question for the division chair, in this case Senator Saxhog, and appropriate policy chairs. I know I've got bills floating around this place that I expect to see incorporated into some of the articles, and I've been presenting my proposal to the policy committees, and then I have my last hearing tomorrow in Health and Human Services, so I can't speak to this particular provision, but I know that's what the attempt has been.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Saxhog.
And Senator Cohen and Senator Anderson. Senator Pappas will have the chance, or has had the chance, to look at this and has either passed or may draw it into a committee.
Senator Anderson, can you clarify what are you talking about? Line 7.28, Section 6, starting on line 7.28? Or can you clarify what you are questioning?
Madam Chair, on the rulemaking, I guess, is in pertains to the expedited temporary licensing on page 11, but that, I guess, would be to Senator Saxhog, 1807. Is that
yes.
correct?
That was heard in state and local.
Okay.
Any other questions, members?
No other questions, Madam Chair. I would move to adopt the spreadsheet, first of all.
Okay, Senator Saxhog has a motion to adopt the spreadsheet for the 2014 State Department and Veterans Supplemental Budget Appropriation. Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion passes.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And then I would move that state government supplemental budget document the state government supplemental document be recommended to pass and be referred to full finance, and I would instruct the staff to make any necessary technical changes.
Thank you. Senator Saxhog has moved that the state government supplement budget document be recommended to pass and referred to full finance and instruct the staff to make any necessary technical changes. Are there any questions? All there in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could make some closing remarks. Members, at this time, we do not have a meeting scheduled for next Tuesday. There's a chance that we'll be meeting hearing a few more bonding requests. We'll let you know as soon as we have clarification. As of this time, we have not been given a deadline for the bonding memo. I want to thank all you members. We've had a good year. It hasn't been a long year, but I think we've got some things done, and our discussions have been thoughtful, managed, and hopefully, particularly in pertaining to veterans, that we've done some good things. Anybody have any questions? Madam Chair?
With that, the motion is adjourned.